Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Hey, Father Daniel, we're fresh off of Turkey Day. Did you do anything fun?
Yeah, I did. Definitely did. I spent some time with my fellow priests. We went up to Tennessee, and then on my way to visit my family for the rest of the weekend and out in Arkansas, where my parents moved many years ago. I grew up in Iowa.
What did Tennessee?
I don't know.
You saw what Arkansas.
Oh, gosh. What a terrible joke. You trying to get on the funniest priests in Atlanta show?
No.
Okay, good.
We'll start this week with writer Helen Andrews argued in a September speech to the National Conservatism Conference that American institutions have become overly feminized. She thinks the rise of cancel culture can be traced to women's increasing representation in fields such as law, medicine, and psychology. Her reasoning is based on the characterization of feminine patterns of behavior that favor cohesion, safety, and ostracization of the enemy. This article came from a website known as the Free Press, whose founder is the newly named editorial head of CBS News, Barry Weiss, is her name.
Okay.
The article asked 7 female contributors from medicine, journalism, and academia for their reactions to the speech. I found some of their comments to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So regarding feminine patterns favoring safety, Joyce Benenson, a lecturer in human evolutionary biology at Harvard, said she agrees that females are responsible for, because that they're responsible for the survival of the offspring, that they use social exclusion to safely reduce the number of opponents, and that insistence on equality subtly dispossesses higher ranked rivals of their power.
Yes, that's pronounced tendency. You can watch that little girls in the playground and you can see that type of behavior.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you contrast that with males who are always competing to mate from early childhood. Boys form groups that hold contests.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes dangerous,
dominance and,
sometimes dangerous ones.
Yep. That's right.
That form hierarchies and they generally respect the winners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. So then another contributor, author Larissa Phillips, recalls moving to a farm in upstate New York from Brooklyn and encountering a rancher who she said she was appalled by as he explained behavioral differences by sex in horses.
Mm-hmm.
She entered farm life, as she says, with a blank slate feminism worldview in which any observation of the difference between male and female behavior was verboten.
Mm-hmm.
She describes how the rancher characterized some female horses as fussy, mm-hmm, and maybe neurotic. I can't remember the terms that he used, and that the male horses were a different way, whatever. And she's like, no, that can't be. You can't say that. And then, you know, later on, she's like, I own horses now for 15 years. She's like, oh yeah, that's right.
I observe the behavior. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So Carol Hooven, another.
Just point out really interesting there that there is, because that what you mentioned in the first point, women tend to look for equality. Sometimes it's harder for them to recognize these natural differences that exist in nature. I grew up around farms, so I totally resonate with what you're saying there as far as these things do exist in nature.
Yeah, and again, this is two guys talking about feminism and the feminine worldview, but
sure.
But I am quoting, you know, some of the 7 contributors to
women academics.
Women. Yes, right.
Right.
So then another one was Carol Hooven, evolutionary biologist at Harvard. And she's reminiscing back to 2005 when then Harvard president Larry Summers suggested that natural differences between the sexes might contribute to women's underrepresentation in certain STEM fields and overrepresentation in other fields.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
He ultimately was forced to resign.
Right.
Right. Because of those comments. And now he's, of course, in the news again because of the Epstein files. So
mm-hmm.
She believes that Harvard has absolutely been feminized over her 2 decades there, and that she sees an atmosphere slowly edging away from open debate toward one prioritizing safety. So I had not really thought about what caused, you know, cancel culture or wokeism.
Sure.
I would have said, if somebody had asked me that, that, you know, political correctness I felt like began back when I was in college in the 80s. And that if I was asked why, I would have said, well, I guess you're coming out of the, you know, post-Vietnam War anti-establishment mm-hmm. era that kind of started in the 60s, that, you know, there was really nothing to protest. And so, you know, we came up with
find something new to protest. Right.
That would have been my know, that would have been my answer. But what are your thoughts about this possibility that feminine control of many of our institutions today has possibly caused or contributed to cancel culture and, well, he says, or she says, wokeism as well?
Well, it's certainly a factor. I don't think you can deny that's factors that are playing into it. Whether it's the cause of it, I think, you know, we can make a more nuanced argument. You know, there have been a lot of people who are contrasting in the news, these articles from Powers that you were talking about and Barry Weiss. But I think there's a substance there that it has really caused a lot of conversation in our culture today. And I think it's an important conversation to have because there's no doubt that women bring a lot of beautiful things, more nurturing, more openness, inclusiveness into society. And sometimes if we have an overly masculine society, it can be really detrimental. It can, trample the weaker or exclude people in an unhealthy way. So there's been definitely bringing some many positive elements into society.
Of course.
But we need to be cognizant of the pros and cons of different approaches, even within different contexts. Like, let's say we try to fight a war against an aggressive opponent who wants to destroy the United States with a very inclusive, let's make everyone get along type of mentality. It won't work because you have bullies out there who will exercise their power and kill you.
Right. The law of might makes right.
Right. And so historically, you can look, and this is fascinating, when you look down through history, there's certain time periods where you have women come into ruling power and they do a great job. Usually it's in times of peace. But in time of war, you need a masculine type of leadership, which is decisive and more imposing. So there are ebbs and flows throughout history, and certainly we're in a time period where things are a little bit more feminized, if you will, with the pros and cons that come with that.
Yeah, I think about how schooling has changed, and I went to my younger primary school years to a Catholic school with a nun who was named Sister John, who ruled with an iron fist that I often felt the backside of with the wrath of with
Sister
a wooden
John.
Paddle.
Okay, yeah. Does that mean you were like a little bit misbehaving?
Well,
like
it might be, but...
Sorry to get personal here.
Yeah, but so I've been paddled a lot.
Have you?
Well, in grade school and in junior high. Anyways, so I think of now how schooling goes today and having had, I've got of my five kids, three of them are sons, and I've really felt a marked difference to how boys are treated and almost like, I mean, boy behavior is just not
accepted. It's not acceptable.
Yeah.
No, that's a well-documented fact and for many critics of the education system. The reality is that the vast majority of teachers, I don't know what the percentage is today, but it's women. And they're coming at education with expectations of what a girl would do. And so sometimes the behavior of boys, which is more rambunctious, they got to move around.
Right. But my school was almost all female teachers, but they were nuns and they just had a different approach.
Right.
They definitely were not afraid to use the corporal approach.
Well, and some of it too is just less ideology. You know, some of the ideology that we've been fed through the university system is not recognizing the real differences that exist between men and women, between boys and girls. There's a fascinating book out there, a little bit outdated now, but Why Gender Makes a Difference by an educator who was looking at the biological difference between boys and girls. It's real. It exists. And both men and women bring great things into society, but we need to balance it.
Right. It should be in a complementary fashion.
Exactly.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com. Crossed
Wires. There's a group called the Menopause who are trying to reframe menopause as a deficiency state, similar to, say, insulin deficiency in diabetes.
Okay.
This loose affiliation of female doctors and some social media influencers are fighting for the broader use of hormone replacement therapy. And in fact, partly from their influence, the FDA has just rolled back the black box warning on HRT that dated back to 2002. In 2002, the FDA ordered this black box warning for HRT following results from a large clinical trial where more than 27,000 women were divided into two groups, one on the hormone replacement, the other on a placebo. Research found that women in the hormone group were more likely to have strokes, breast cancer, in addition to higher rates of dementia, urinary incontinence, and gallbladder disease.
Doesn't sound like very good side effects.
No. Following this new guidance, the next year, breast cancer rates across the world dropped substantially. When women stopped taking, when menopausal women stopped taking HRT, hormone replacement therapy. When you combine the more than 230% increase in the incidence of breast cancer from before the introduction of the birth control pill to current rates and the sharp reduction in cancer when large swaths of menopausal women stopped taking hormones in 2003. Why are we so willing to take hormones long term and treat this as a deficiency state? So I have to step back and think about what do I take long term? I'm taking I'm taking statins for cholesterol. Right. I'll probably be taking them the rest of my life, right? And so I'm trying
and
to.
And there's
correct.
Some interesting studies on that too.
Yes, I know.
well, we'll save that for another date.
Right. So it's not like I have a problem with the taking of medicines the rest of your life, but hormones are different, right? Where you're treating, where we're just sort of refusing to age, not refusing to age, but that's poor terminology. Where again, I guess as I started, it's a deficiency state rather than, you know, aging just being a natural biological
transition.
Process.
Yeah, right.
So like menopause is not a pathology.
Mm-hmm.
So it happens to everybody who lives long enough.
Right.
So what are your thoughts about this kind of treating these types of things as a pathology?
Well, we do it with so many things. Like, why do men get treatment for their hair loss, for erectile dysfunction? They're trying to save something that is, you know, there's a natural transition. Your body's just moving on from it. So I say that every time I look in the sink in the morning and see that, you know, a couple more hairs down the drain.
Yeah, and by the way, the hormones is not just for women, this thought process, right? Because as you go through andropause, right, your dropping of your testosterone, men who are taking testosterone replacement are at much greater risk of heart attacks
and
blood clots as well.
Yeah. I think it just goes back to the tendency that we have to want to control our own lives and not respect the natural rhythms that God placed and the natural limitations on our body. I think that's the foundation of this, Chris. I mean,
of course we all want to, like, I would like to be, I'm 57. I'd like to be able to do the things that I was able to do when I was 25.
Yep.
And I just can't. Like, for example, I had to give up running, right? Mm-hmm. Because my knees were swelling now every time I ran.
Right.
So, of course, I'd like to do that. But I also, you know, I accept that it's a natural aging fact. I would probably, if there were ways to alleviate the arthritis that I have in my shoulders and knees and hands, you know, I would definitely want to take something that, you know, mitigates that and probably for the rest of my life. But but that's probably, I think it's different than changing the, you know, the structure of my body by taking hormones.
Mm. Well, I'm not so sure. It's a different form. I mean, most medications we take are shifting the chemical balance in our bodies. So I don't see a tremendous difference from other types of medication. It's a different.
Well,
in a
if you took
sense,
a medication, for say arthritis, that's just masking the pain.
Yeah.
Then that's not altering in the way that hormones are your mental state. And
why is it not changing it? It's changing the way your body interacts and recognizes the signals internally, and registering a pain. And there are interesting studies that have shown potentially a correlation between, maybe even a causation between Tylenol and increased autism.
Right.
So, we talked about that in a prior program, you know, whether or not, and these are scientific studies that they have to show it out with the facts over time, but anything that alters the way that God created us is not necessarily wrong. But I think we have to look deeper into our own hearts. Am I trying to play God? Am I trying to control things? Am I not accepting the circumstances of life?
Crosswires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crosswires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. 21-year-old Ram Braslovsky was one of the Israeli hostages held by Hamas who was recently released.
Yep.
He has told an Israeli television station that he was subjected to sexual violence in addition to physical abuse during his 2-year captivity in Gaza. He describes being savagely beaten with a donkey whip and subjected to 20-minute long torture sessions 7 times a day. He said his response was, you know, quote, "You just pray to God for it to stop. And while you're there every day with every beating, every day you say to yourself, I completed another day in hell," unquote. He says he was praying to God, quote, "Please save me. Get me out of this already," unquote. His captors also starved him and ate food in front of him, stating, "If you convert to Islam, we'll bring you food." To which he replied, "I was born a Jew. I'll die a Jew." A faithful, persecuted Jew, however heroic or virtuous, because they are not baptized and not Christian, cannot be canonized a saint in the Catholic Church. So where would they lie in the eyes of the Church?
Well, I think we go back to the Second Vatican documents that talk about how anyone who can be saved, even outside the Church, if they are following their conscience, an upright conscience. So this is really important, I think, for us. Sometimes people say, "Oh, you know, you think that no one can be saved outside the Catholic Church."
Well, I'm not saying that they can't be saved. We know, as Catholics teach, that we're not the only way to heaven. We're the straightest path with
the
easiest doors
path
along the way,
the best path to get to heaven. Yes, but other people who follow their conscience, can get to heaven. And so, in this case, this guy who's trying to follow his conscience, he's trying to follow God faithfully and not deny his faith, not deny what God has asked of him. Yeah, he wouldn't be called a martyr as a Catholic, but he would be a true witness for conscience and for faith. I mean, you think about it this way, Chris. You know, the readings that we have in the Catholic Church at the end of the liturgical year, which we've had in the past weeks, are all from the Book of Maccabees. You know, the 7 sons who are all massacred in defending their faith. Mattathias, who, you know, carries out fidelity to the laws of the Jewish scriptures. You know, we have saints in the Catholic Church who they stand up for their faith. But we, as Catholics, we recognize our forebears in the faith in the Old Testament.
Yeah, but the difference there is that the crucifixion of Jesus, he descended to the dead and preached the good news and asked, "Are you going to accept it?"
He did indeed.
And then those folks would then, because the reversal of the Jordan, were baptized or not, whether depending on their decision. In this case, you have a non-baptized person who's acting like a saint.
Yeah, because he's acting according to his conscience.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what the Church talks about in the salvation of those outside of the Church. If through no fault of his own, he doesn't know about Jesus and doesn't know the Catholic faith, and he's trying to follow his conscience, he can get to heaven.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Protestants, and specifically evangelical Protestants, generally show a much stronger level of support for the notion of the modern Israeli state when compared to Catholics. The Pew Research Center reports that Protestants and white evangelical Protestants are 72% in favor, and they believe that God gave Israel to the Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
Among Catholics, only 45% of American Catholics have a favorable view of Israel.
Interesting.
So evangelical support is primarily, the thought is, it's primarily rooted in the belief that Israel's existence is a direct fulfillment of biblical prophecy concerning the end times and the second coming of Jesus. The Catholic Church, of course, gives political recognition to the state of Israel, but does not give a theological endorsement of Zionism or the divine right to the land.
Right.
The Church does not view the modern state of Israel's existence as a fulfillment of biblical prophecy. Catholic theology holds that promises God made to Israel in the Old Testament are fulfilled in Jesus Christ and the Church, and that the Church is often referred to as the New Israel. What? Give me your thoughts on this.
Yeah, it's a complicated topic, and I think it's worth having real conversations with people. The tendency that I see in a lot of what's going on in our current political discourse is for people just to write off other points of view. So people will lock down and say, "Oh, I'm in favor of Israel," and they put a pro-Israel flag up. Or, "No, I'm in favor of Hamas, you know, genocide." And we just shut down real discourse. I mean, it's a very complex and nuanced reality. when you get over there, I've been over to the Holy Land, I think four or five different occasions, and interacted and talked with the local people on many occasions. And the first time I went over there was in 2004 during the Second Intifada, and I was helping it at the Notre Dame of Jerusalem Center, which was entrusted by the Vatican to my religious order, the Legionaries of Christ. And I was talking with our business manager there, Yusuf, who is from Bethlehem, and his family had been basically kicked out of their homes during the Six-Day War when the Israeli troops went in to kick out those who were fighting against them. And it was and they never returned the property. So it was expropriated. And it was a very complex situation in which injustice, where their property was stolen, they were never given any retribution for that, and the property never came back to them. And then you have situations of, Israeli settlers going in and taking over lands that belong to the Palestinians.
Isn't that what Joshua did when he entered the Promised Land?
It certainly was. So there are many different layers of complication in the Holy Land. And I think it's sometimes as Americans, we look at it very simplistically and too simplistically. Wanting to impose our solutions from the outside. And they add on to the historical context is all the religious complication and the racial complication, because sometimes we talk in just generically like Palestinians, but among the Palestinians, you have Jews, Christians, Arab, Muslims, you have other different religions, Orthodox, all among the Palestinians. So our simplistic labels just really don't do justice to the complications of the reality. And I think this is where the church does have some really great insight here, because we do have like the Latin patriarch who lives there in Jerusalem, who's Pizzaballa, who's lived in that area for so long, has an understanding of the people, that I think the church brings a richness to those conversations. So I don't know. There's no easy answers.
There is no easy answer. I do think it's interesting that sort of the Catholic Church is saying there are no easy answers. And so we don't necessarily, endorse or not endorse. Whereas I found it interesting, the article talking about the reason for evangelical support, and it kind of, I now understand it a little better.
Yeah. But it's in my opinion, it's too simplistic.
No, I'm not saying that I endorse it. I'm just saying I understand it.
No, I understand it as well, but I think it's a worldview that is just too simplistic to say, oh, God gave this holy land to the Israelites. Well, I'm sorry, the Israelites have been gone for a long time. And even racially, you've got two main branches, the Sephardi and the Ashkenaz, who have little to do, at least in the Ashkenaz, racially with the original Hebrews.
Well, we could do a whole couple years of shows on this topic. So,
gosh, if you want some interesting insight into this, I mean, read A History of the Jews by Paul Johnson or many other historical books out there. But at the end of the day, Chris, and I realize we're getting short on time here, but at the end of the day, I think it's about bringing people to reconciliation, bringing people to truth, and that's not easy.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. The Vatican, in a doctrinal note on November 4th, is discouraging formal use of the titles co-redemptrix and mediatrix of all graces for the Virgin Mary. These titles have been used since at least back to 1894. The concern is these titles risk obscuring the exclusive role of Jesus as the sole redeemer and mediator between God and humanity. The document points out that Mary herself was redeemed by Christ and received God's grace, meaning she could not be the source or mediatrix of the grace she herself received. Nonetheless, the Church recognizes that Mary intercedes for believers in heaven, a form of subordinate mediation shared by all saints, but uniquely effective in her case as the Mother of Christ. Give me your thoughts on this clarification of the title of Mary.
Right. I think it's an important clarification. Personally, I've heard all the arguments both for and against, and I think the Vatican took a very measured and intelligent approach that I think was very respectful of history, of tradition, and of striking a reasoned middle ground in basically saying that the title of co-redemptrix is, it requires so much explanation that it's problematic and we shouldn't really be using it. The title of mediatrix, a little bit different, not such a negative view, and understood properly, there, obviously Mary is a mediator of graces. But I've talked with a lot of Protestants about these things, and these are, they are sticking points for them. And sometimes people will say, oh, well, this is just, you know, this is Cardinal Fernandez and vestiges of Pope Francis and kind of a negative view. And I'm like, that's, no, this is something that Pope Benedict, he shared some reserves about these titles and the need for further clarification. And what I've noted, I've read a number of articles about this topic, Chris. What the strain that I've found in those who don't accept this this clarification from the Vatican is really a Protestant approach. It's like everything has to be according to their own way of seeing things, and they're not, they lack the humility to accept a decision of the church. I think that's really problematic.
Well, on a related note about Mary, this was the same day in the Wall Street Journal I was reading that the recent invasion of the Asian version of the ladybug called the Harlequin lady beetle.
Okay.
I've noticed this, by the way. I don't know if you have, but there's a bumper crop of ladybugs this year.
I haven't noticed.
Okay. Well, I learned the ladybug is widely believed to be named after the Blessed Virgin Mary. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
So in medieval Europe, farmers were suffering from infestations of aphids,
mm-hmm.
and that was destroying their crops. These aphids were destroying their crops. They prayed to the Virgin Mary. Soon after, these helpful beetles, which we now call ladybugs, appeared in large number, devoured the pests, and saved the crops. So the grateful farmers named the insects Our Lady's Beetles, which later became ladybugs.
Interesting. That's a fascinating little tidbit there.
Yep. Denmark has announced a ban on social media for children under the age of 15. This is following Australia's ban for the same thing for children under 16. Should we do this in the U.S.?
I think it's a great idea, at least to talk about it. And we already know all the negative effects that social media has on kids.
Is there anything beneficial for children under the age of 15 to be doing on social media?
I can't think of anything.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's time we take their lead. And I'm surprised we would be following the lead of a country like Denmark.
Yeah. No, I think it's a great discussion to have as a society. And like we've talked about before, Chris, so many of these things, we need to dialogue about them and not just accept whatever is thrown at us from people who are trying to make money.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crossed Wires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.